Hi, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsum a day for the second day of Iyar. Today we're going to see responsum in Heichal Yitzchak Orach Chaim Chaf Zayin, a responsum of Yitzchak Herzog that was dated the second of Iyar of Tavshin Yud Bet of 1952. Now, I want to say up front that this is a responsum that's not going to have a firm answer to it. Rav Herzog is going to struggle with the question that he's asked, but while he's struggling, he's going to remind us of many important halachic ideas and halachic principles that come into play on the question that he was asked, which was a very practical question. How do you guard the kibbutz of Tirat Zvi on Shabbat? One possibility is to have mounted riders, and then you'll need few of them because they can cover more territory. And the other possibility is a foot patrol, which will involve more people, but perhaps will involve fewer or less serious violations of Shabbat. It's a reminder that part of building a real life in a real world within the guidance of halakha and the requirements of halakha and the strictures of halakha involves making important choices and thinking out questions very seriously. And the answer isn't always clear. Now, personally, I'd say that if the answer isn't clear, then that means that in a lot of ways, the choice isn't that vital. By which I mean that if you can't show significant difference between whether they use riders or foot patrol, then the answer might be these are necessities and whichever feels better to you people in terms of other factors that come into play, go ahead and do so. Meaning if I had to guess, I would have thought that I would say to myself, once I've checked it out, see, the process has to be, let's check with halacha. Halacha may have a strong preference, that's one possibility, or it may have a strong resistance to one possibility, meaning one possibility is that it's better to do it next way for some reason. The other possibility is that there's less violation of Shabbat in one of the ways, and therefore it's better, but it's better in sort of in the negative space. It's better because it avoids problems. If neither of those are obviously true in halakha, so that's a point at which you say, well, there's no obvious difference, and therefore you can do either one and feel equally comfortable. And it's a reminder also that when times of stress come to people, by stress I don't mean only psychological stress, I mean when circumstances dictate that we have to do something, which is not the ideal, meaning it's not the ideal to have to bear arms or ride on or walk around the kibbutz on Shabbat because there are, unfortunately, sadly, enemies around. And one of the brachot in the Torah is that there will be times when we won't have to worry about such things, and that we could just take Shabbat off from guard duty and things like that. But while it's true that we have to face such circumstances, some people, I think, would find ways in which halakha makes it impossible to deal with it at all. They'd say, oh, you can't violate Shabbos, you have to, and that could be a way of letting halakha get in the way of living life. Other people, I think, might say, you can't pay attention to halakha, you just have to do what you have to do, and that would be a way of living life, but it would be a way of no longer living within the halakhic framework. Rav Herzog is giving us an example of how poskim are showing us ways in which we can do both. We can confront real problems in life, real situations that are real necessities, and deal with them in meaningful ways, while also keeping track of and paying attention to the halakhic issues that are raised. So this is Heichal Yitzchak Orach Chaim Chaf Zayin. Let's thank the OU, Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz and David Hackhauser, for their assistance with the shirim, and then let's jump right in. So the question is from Kibbutz Tirat Zvi. They have enemies around them, sadly. And not just enemies, they also have robbers around them, listim, and they have to guard their fields. And the kibbutz itself is one kind of a security issue, but they have fields where they're growing stuff and they make their livelihood there, and the worry is, or the reality is, that people will come and steal from them on Shabbat or destroy their fields on Shabbat, and that will cause terrible loss and maybe even danger to life and whatever it is, and therefore the question is, should they go now? I would say, I think there are people who might tell you that no, that this is a monetary need only, if they could interpret it that way, and you don't have the right for monetary needs to violate Shabbat, you should, who knows what, hire people or whatever, hire non-Jews or whatever it is. I'm not sure what the other answers would be, but I can imagine people saying these needs don't rise to the level of allowing the violation of Shabbat for guarding them. Rav Herzog doesn't even start there, doesn't even discuss that issue. The question he's presented and the question he deals with is, what should they do? Have fewer guard people on horseback, or have more guards but have it on foot and therefore avoid whatever the problems are in riding horses on Shabbat, which we'll get to. So Rav Herzog takes the question up first, and the question of, well, the question sort of assumes that it's worse to be on horseback than on foot, and that therefore the only reason why you might think to use the horseback riders is because there are fewer of them. So he says, but let's first talk about whether or not one watchman on foot is better or worse than one watchman on horseback? So that's the first question he takes up. Should we is it prefer horseback or not? So let's say riding on a horse, he points out, is asur midivrehem, has two has a rabbanon. The riding itself is a drabbanon, and then there's a prohibition of mechamer. Mechamer is when you use an animal on Shabbat to carry packages or loads for you. So here, there's a load because he has, I think, the items that he uses during his guard duty, but also the load of this person himself. And then, and then three is shvitat bemto. There's a positive commandment in the Torah. Right, so mechamer is a prohibition of the Torah. It's a plain prohibition. It's not a melacha of Shabbat, we'll get to. It's not one of the 39 melachot, but it is a prohibition. And the requirement of shvitat bemto, of letting one's animal rest on Shabbat, is a Torah obligation, a positive obligation of the Torah to let animals rest, and here you're not letting it do so. So that's what you got with the violation of the riding. But what you don't seem to have on horseback, suggest Herzog. Like I said, he's going to go back and forth. This is going to be a tshuva. We're going to take ideas, and he's going to point out reasons to doubt that those ideas are true, and he's going to go back and forth and end up saying he's not positive. So, but the and therefore, the reason that I found it worth doing wasn't about the conclusion, it's about the process that he's going through and the reminder of various halachic principles, such as step one, we now know that riding on animals on Shabbos involves Ister Abundant of riding an animal on Shabbat. Since he's going to have a load as well as a animal, I think it's other than the man, because otherwise, why would the Rabbana need the prohibition of riding? I think it's that he's going to carry stuff with him that's necessary, like a rifle and ammunition and things like that, or maybe binoculars, things that are necessary for the process of guarding a kibbutz, of guarding the field, and that counts as a load. We're not allowed to have animals carry a load for us. That's a Torah prohibition of mechamer. And then there's the obligation of shvitat bemto, that we're supposed to leave our animals to rest on Shabbat, that we are violating. So that's a rabbanon, a plain prohibition, and a plain obligation. But what you don't have is the prohibition of hutsa'ah. So hutsa'ah, let's remember, is the prohibition on Shabbat. And it's a prohibition, you have to say very carefully and they'll write the terms, otherwise you'll get it wrong. So it's a reshut yachid to reshut harabim. Reshut yachid is a private space, meaning, in halachic terms, a space that is set off from other spaces by walls of 10 tefachim high, or by an elevation of 10 tefachim high within a certain slope, whatever the answer, whatever that is, or a decline, a pit of 10 tefachim deep, again within that slope, and it's got to be four tefachim. To be a reshut yachid, I think it has to be only four tefachim by four tefachim. Okay, so it has to be that kind of space. And if it's not that kind of space, closed off from the public, it's not a reshut yachid. So to write the prohibition of hotzah from a space like that into a public space. And the definition of public space we're going to get to later in the response, so I won't say it now. The other possibility for hotza'ah that's relevant to our conversation here would be if you're in a public space carrying an item more than 4 amot. Okay, so 4 amot is about 6 feet, maybe a little more than 6 feet. Carrying an item in a public space, which we'll define later in the responsum, carrying an item that far is also itself a prohibition of hotza'ah. But the point that Rav Herzog is making right now is that if the animal is carrying the load, and I'm not holding anything, and I'm riding on the animal, maybe even I am holding something, because it's the animal that's taking it out. The Gemara in Shabbat, Kuf Mem Bet, says, Hamotzi Adam V'Kelav Alav, right, I'm sorry, if Sub Patur, Hotzio Kemot Shehein Chayav, Nishano Sein Nechshav Hamotzi. So the Gemara there says, let's say a man, forget the horse for a second, let's say a man picks up another man who's got clothing on him and who's carrying a camera and a gun and a binoculars or whatever it is. So the Gemara says that's not going to be an act of hotzah. It's not a hotzah on the man because we say chay no seir atzmo. This led to people to be confused and think that it's okay to push babies who can walk or carry babies who can walk. It's a whole other conversation. But the Gemara assumes that a person who can walk, it was ambulatory, it's not permitted to carry them, but it's not a Torah prohibition of hotza'ah to take them out. So if this man has everything on him, then you're going to be potter because the person carrying him is not doing anything. But if you carry out the man and then also those other items elsewhere on your person, so then it's going to be chayav, because the person or the other person is carrying those things, right? So, Jake lifts up is Shimon who's carrying those items. Now Shimon isn't walking, so he can't be chayav for hotza. But since Jake is carrying him and those items are not being worn by the guy being carried. So that counts as hotza'ah, and that's a full prohibition, full violation of the prohibition to take things from the private place to the public place, or four amot in the Rishit HaRabim, because the one carrying the person, the one who's lifting the person, is considered the one also exporting these items, taking these items from the private space to the public space. So in our case, the rochev, the rider, can't be considered hotza'ah, someone violating the prohibition of hotza'ah, because, like we just said, the one being, somebody being carried doesn't violate hotza'ah. He's violating mechamer. Right, so he's violating the chamer, but the animal can't be violating hotzah, because the violent animal doesn't have that obligation. So, if it were to be true, says Rav Herzog, that we today had a Rishut HaRabim d'oraita, this is a big question we're going to get to again. Fundamentally, halacha, starting with Rashi and Tosfos, was unsure by the definition of a Rishut HaRabim d'oraita. The Gemara talks about it. It talks about it that Carmelite is a wide open area where not so many people travel all the time. Now, Rishut HaRabim seems to be a wide open area where a lot of people travel. Definition of wide open isn't clear. There are Rishonim who hold it's got to be 16 Amot by 16 Amot to be a Rishut HaRabim. There has to be a place like that, some open space like that. And Rashi and Tosfos have this idea that it has to be that there are 600,000 people who travel through that space regularly, and the definition of regularly is something the Akronim talk about, and that makes it very difficult to find a Rishut HaRabim on a Torah level. So by the time of Rav Herzog in the 1950s, there are many, many places that assume that there is no such thing as a Rishut HaRabim d'oraita in those times. Today already, I think you have, even by those standards, you might have a Rishut HaRabim d'oraita, but much fewer than you think. And that is, by the way, one of the first steps in building Eruvin in neighborhoods and communities. The first step is to say, well, the Rishut HaRabim, what looks to us like the open spaces, are not in fact d'oraita open spaces. They're in fact d'rabanan open spaces. That makes it prohibited to carry on a d'rabanan level, and that makes it easier to build an Eruv, to build the structures that will halachically, to build, it's really not an Eruv, but to build the structures that will allow us to halachically consider this whole area like it's one joint courtyard for a lot of people. Different topic, not our topic today, but the point is he brings that up because here, if we say that we don't have a Rishut HaRabim d'oraita, then it's clearly better, I'm sorry, if we say we do have a Rishut HaRabim d'oraita, if we were to believe that, then the people who go out to watch the fields on foot are carrying their guns and their other equipment, which is vital and necessary equipment, but they're carrying their guns and vital equipment with them, and that will be an act of hotza'ah. That's a violation. It's not a violation because it's a problem of pikuach nefesh here. It's a problem of saving things, and they have the right to do it, but it is pushing aside, probably the better way to say it, it's pushing aside a prohibition of one of the melachot, whereas if you ride on the horseback, you're not going to do that anymore, because we just said, hotza'ah, carrying things while on a horse, is not an act of hotza'ah, as shown by that Gemara in Shabbat, that if a person carries another person, it's the carrying person who's acting, who's committing hotza'ah, if there is any hotza'ah. So here, the horse can't be committing hotza'ah, so that won't be the issue. The issue will only be mechamer, which is prohibited on a Torah level, but it's a lesser prohibition on a Torah level. It may only be an asay, it may only be an obligation, meaning it might be that we infer the prohibition against mechamer from positive commandments of the Torah, or it might be that it's a law, but it's definitely a law, a prohibition that doesn't involve malkot. So hotza'ah, carrying, is a law, is a prohibition that would involve skila, being put to death, or it would involve karet, it would involve, if it was done bishogeg, if it was done unwittingly, it would involve bringing a korban chatat. And here, you're comparing that to violating mechamer, which is a prohibition not to be treated lightly, or maybe an obligation still not to be treated lightly, but does not rise to the level of hotza'ah, which is a much more serious prohibition. Now, there's a complication there, however, because there is a run in Yoma that became very well known and raised a very important question, and then is dealt with, and the run doesn't conclude on the issue, and very few other people conclude on the issue as well, but it's an issue that comes up in many different forms, and here's one of the examples, because there are those who would say, the run questions whether or not it's better to do, one, when we have to violate the Torah for valid purposes, is it better, since we prefer to violate it as minimally as possible, is it better to violate it one big time, or to violate it many, many little times? So the example in the round, I believe, is let's say somebody has to eat on Yom Kippur because they're ill, and nobody's questioning that. They're ill, they have to eat on Yom Kippur. But we already have available to us, let's say they have to eat meat for whatever reason, we already have available to us non-kosher meat, meaning meat that was not properly slaughtered, and let's say it's either going to eat it raw or it's already cooked. and or I'm sorry, not it's already cooked, or we're gonna have to cook it, but we're gonna have to cook whatever other meat we get as well. The other option is we could go and check. This is in a time when people still had butchers around who could check meat for them on demand. We're gonna go check an animal and then prepare it and cook it. Now, the difference is that when you shech the animal, you're violating Yom Kippur in a much more serious way than eating neveli. Neveli is a plain prohibition. Violating Yom Kippur is a karet prohibition. Is a prohibition that could cause you that if it were to be done willfully and deliberately to violate the Torah, would lead to a punishment of karet. Which would we prefer? So here's the thing. If the answer was, I'm going to have one bite of the non-kosher meat, then the non-kosher meat is much less serious. And of course, I would do that rather than the killing of the animal. But the Ron's point is, I'm going to have to eat bite after bite. Unless this person has to eat a lot of meat in order to be restored to reasonable health. So then they're going to take many bites, many violations of the prohibition of eating non-kosher meat, where it's just one. Now, it's true. It's a one karet. So that's the question the Ron weighs and doesn't quite answer it. He seems to think that if it's enough of the eating of non-kosher meat, meaning because to some extent, let's say you have to have three square meals that day before sunset of non-kosher meat, he seems to imply that he thinks that then it might be better to procure kosher meat, even if that requires violating the more serious prohibition. But that's sort of an unresolved issue. So here too, you might say, well, it's true that when you start walking outside, you're going to do hotzah, but once you've done the hotzah, now, he seems to think that as you walk, you're going to be walking not in a Rishon HaRabim, because then you'd say that every four amot would be another act of hotzah, although he might think that since you're not stopping anywhere, you're going on guard duty, and you're never stopping, that's why he might think that that's different. But basically, his question is, if you have one large act of hotzah of taking things from the private space to the public space, but the other possibility is to ride a horse for a long time, and every act of the riding is a much lesser prohibition, but is happening over and over again, maybe then it's better to go out on foot. So he says, nope, that idea of the run, that the lesser prohibitions might add up to the situation where we prefer to even do one big one rather than the lesser ones. He says that's only, and this is a very interesting insight of the Herzog, he thinks that's only if the lesser ones are also d'oraita prohibitions. But here, fundamentally, the prohibition is riding a horse, which is a d'rabbanan, which is a rabbinic prohibition. And then what you're left with is you have the prohibition of hotza'ah, a full-fledged violation of Shabbat, against the idea of mechamer, so mechamer is a much lighter prohibition. It's a biblical one, but it's a much lighter issue. It might not be a prohibition. It might only be an obligation. And even if the prohibition doesn't get malchus, so it's much, much lighter. So therefore, he thinks it wouldn't rise to that level. Because the example the Ron gave, remember, was non-kosher meat, each act of which really deserves malchut in a court. So that's much more serious than regular prohibition. And you're going to put in a derabbanan as well. So Herzog thinks it doesn't add up. Even that doesn't add up. And that's an interesting insight into how we view the significance and the severity and the stringency of various prohibitions, such that we would avoid one over the other, even within this kind of halachic calculus. So you might say, but there's also the idea that we have to, on a d'oraita level, on a biblical level, we have to let our animals rest. We have to let our animals desist from labor on Shabbat. Herzog says, yeah, but the Rambam holds that those are two actually the same thing. Mechamer, the problem of Mechamer, of having the animal carry loads for us, is that we're not letting it rest, and therefore, it's really only one, and therefore it would be better to violate one big, to violate the horse riding prohibitions, which are one Torah issue of Mechamer / not letting our animals rest, with the Issur Derabbanan of riding, rather than Issur Skila. Even that, however, he says, he's not sure that that's not fully clear to him. It's Tzarech Iyun, and the Tzarech Iyun is, I think, part of Tzarech Iyun is that we don't know how to weigh these things. This is part of a Mishnah Avot that we all know, that we have to worry about light issues in halacha as much as what seems stringent issues to halacha, because we don't know the reward for mitzvot. So that whole idea of we don't know rewards and we don't really know how to weigh things, that's all part of this calculus. Where Herzog is saying, I'm not sure about the calculus there. So let's suppose there are many Rishonim, he says, the Ramban and the Magen Mishnah also understood the Rambam that way, who thought that no, Mechamer is a separate prohibition from Shvitat Be'emto. Shvitat Be'emto is one issue. We have an obligation to let our animals cease from any sort of labor. And in addition to that, the Torah said, and by the way, in addition, don't make it carry packs for you. Don't make it carrying kinds of loads. But, he says, mechamer in its prohibitive sense is when the animal carries a load and the owner or the person, you know, running the animal is helping in some way, is participating. But where the person is not participating at all, there might only be a prohibition that's inferred from an obligation to the Torah. It's called an isur aseh. An isur aseh is when the Torah says something, and while by it saying something, we understand that we're not allowed to do something. So let's say the Torah says, I don't have any examples in my mind. Here would be an example. If the Torah says, you know, let your animal let your animal be free of packs on Shabbat, then that would imply a prohibition. But implied prohibitions are called nisur aseh, and those are a lower level of prohibition in the Torah than other levels in the halakhic system. And if the owner partakes of it as part of the process, then he thinks it's a lav, but then there might not be the aseh of shvitat be'amto anymore. And that whole issue is also another issue that's not fully understood in halakha, meaning it's not fully clarified. People are not sure of how to rule on it. So that's where he would leave that. Except that, he says, even if it were true, they have two prohibitions in the Torah, I have a way to reduce that as well. Meaning he's leaning towards saying horseback is better, because when you're on foot, and this is before we get to how many people are going to be doing it, right? On foot, he thinks you have a violation of hotzah. If we had a shudder of do right, if we had public spaces at a Torah level, on foot violates a huge do right, a karate do right, and that's likely needs to be avoided. Even if you're going to end up doing more as a single individual, going to end up doing more of lower level things, in addition to which he now says, and I have an idea for how we could lower or reduce the numbers of prohibitions as well. Let's suppose you were to borrow your friend's animal, because then there isn't the prohibition of shvitat behemto. Torah says, l'may yanuach shorcha v'chamorcha. You have to let your animal rest now. Theoretically, one could have argued that if the owner lets you borrow it, that he's violating the prohibition by letting you do it. But I think Rav Herzog is assuming that that's not the fullest violation of that prohibition. That leaves only mechamer. And he has Rishonim who says that. The Ran, the Rashba, the Urayim. So that it's only mechamer. It's only prohibition of having animals carry a pack on Shabbos. That would be an independent prohibition. So that would then leave us back again with an Iser Skila, a prohibition that merits stoning and the death penalty if it's done deliberately in front of witnesses and willfully, and against a prohibition of the toe, which is not to be treated lightly, along with a rabbinic prohibition of rechiva, of riding horses. And by the way, the Eglei Tal and others think that maybe it's not even true that there's a Torah prohibition of mechamer, of having an animal carry a pack, if it's not a pack, a load, if it's not your animal. If that would be true, then the riding version has no prohibitions in the Torah, which is obviously much better. So, were we to be sure that there are public spaces at a Doraita level, at a biblical level, it's clear to him that even one guard should prefer to borrow somebody else's horse and ride it on Shabbat as a way of minimizing the Shabbat violation. However, he says, we don't think we have a Rishon HaRabim Do right in our times. The reason that I mentioned before, that it became well accepted that an area that doesn't have 60,000 people traveling it, and that's certainly true of Tzvi in the 1950s, cannot be a Rishon HaRabim Do right. That cannot be a public space at a biblical level. And now we reverse the calculation, because the person walking has only one Issur D'Rabbanan. What's the Issur D'Rabbanan? He's carrying on Shabbos, but at a D'Rabbanan level. Okay, but that's all he's doing. Whereas now, the rider is at least doing riding, which is D'Rabbanan, and then you've got all those other things that are coming into play, right? Because maybe it's mechamer, maybe he's having the animal carry a pack, maybe he's stopping the animal from resting, and all those other things that we were talking about before. So they're back there. And he points out that the Rashba holds, you can have mechamer even in a courtyard, meaning you might have thought, some people held, that mechamer is only if the animal's outside in a public space, but if it's in a courtyard, it's not considered the kind of carrying a load, carrying a pack, that was prohibited by the Torah, but the Rashba did not agree. He thought it used in a chatzer, even in an enclosed space. The Ran thought it was only d'oraita if it was an open space or a public space, meaning if we think there's no Rishon HaRabim, you might have said, we have no d'oraitas because the Ran holds it's only in a Rishon HaRabim. We don't have Rishon HaRabim, we don't have a public space, we're okay. So he says, but the Rashba holds, and again, this gets into the fact that in halacha, we try to keep track of various shitot, and we don't just say, Ran's a good guy, I'll follow the Ran. We try to the extent possible to be aware of and sensitive to the opinions of important authorities, and sometimes even of more minor authorities, because part of Yirat Shamayim, part of the proper fear of heaven, is trying to make sure as best we can that we're keeping the Torah as everybody would agree the Torah is supposed to be kept. So you have a suffix of an Issur Torah. You have at least a possibility that writing involves the prohibition of the Torah of Mechamer. Now before, we've been until now sort of dumping on Mechamer as not so serious. It's only not so serious in contrast to the prohibition of Hotza'ah, of carrying, at a Torah level, at a biblical level. But once we've said there's no Rishit Rabbim D'Oraita, there's no biblical prohibition of carrying, there's no biblical public spaces, now it's a derabbanan against that, and then Mechamer is clearly much more serious. But then he says, it doesn't quite work either, because you can't just forget about the issue of carrying it at Torah level, because there are Rishonim who hold, as I said before, as Rashi and the Ritosos, that became widely accepted, and that's why many Sfaradim don't accept Eruvin, don't accept community Eruvin, because they rely on the Skula, but there are certainly Rishonim who didn't think about that. So if there are Rishonim who didn't think about that, and think that we have Rishonim, we have biblical level, we have biblically defined public spaces, and that means we have biblical Hotzah, you have Rishonim like that, then you have a Suffolk Iser Skila. You have a possibility that the watchmen on foot are violating the Torah at a karet level, and that would be compared to, etc., as we said before, and then you have to go back to, we have a problem with this. So, Rav Herzog points out that the Magen Avraham and Shulchan Aruch wonders about the following question. Let's suppose you have a problem, you have a suffix, and a maybe violation of the Torah at a plain lav level, at a plain prohibition level, tchumen of Yud Bet Mil. You have somebody, so it's generally assumed that while traveling 2,000 amot outside of one's living space on Shabbat is a rabbinic prohibition. There are many Rishonim who hold that going 12 mil, which is like 6 to 8 miles or 8 to 10 miles outside of one's living space, that might be a d'oraita. That is, many Rishonim hold, is a biblical prohibition. So the Magen Avraham says, so if you have that problem, what about, maybe it's better to ride on a horse, for all the reasons that riding on a horse are a problem today, but there are those who hold that when you're riding, you're above 10 tefachim, above the ground, and that maybe tchumen doesn't apply there. That's a conversation we can't get into now, but there are those who hold that way. So maybe riding would be better, riding, which is violates the prohibition of riding, but maybe it would be better because it avoids the prohibition of tchumen, according to some opinions. He leaves that unclear. Rav Herzog says, he leaves it unresolved, but Rav Herzog says that if the choice was a possible skila violation, meaning not a tchumen violation, a distance violation, but a possible violation of hotza'ah, of carrying at a Torah level, and it's only against a possible violation of the Torah in terms of the animal carrying it, but there's no malkot there, and even though there's the rabbanan added in, then maybe even a possible violation. So even though, yes, Rashi tells us there's no Rishon HaRabim D'Oraita, there's no public thoroughfare in a biblical level in our times, but there's still the possibility that that's true. Maybe that should figure into our calculus as well. But he's not sure about that either, because he says you can't really say that it's a continuing doubt, since most of the Jewish people rely on Eruvin. And Eruvin is something, unless you really close an area, I mean, if you really build a wall around the place and you close the doors at night, that you can turn into a place that could have an Eruv. So many small yeshuvim in Eretz Yisrael, many small settlements in Eretz Yisrael are really fenced in, and they really close their gates at night, so there it's much easier halakhically to make an Eruv. But all the places that have an Eruv, that, you know, well accepted Eruvin, but that are in large communities without those kinds of things, they're relying on the idea that there is no prohibition d'oraita, there is no possible public space at the d'oraita level, and therefore, if you're going to say that, then you have to, you can't bring it up again as a concern here, and therefore he thinks you have to assume that the walking is going to be better, because you can't say, no, maybe he's carrying it at d'oraita level. Accept that. Once you go that way, he points out that there's a run. I think I got the run wrong earlier, but there's a run who holds that when you're in a Carmelite, so a Carmelite is a open space, but that does not qualify to be a Rishon HaRabim D'Oraita, a biblical public open space. So once you're in a Carmelite, okay, so he goes back and forth like that for a while, and I could do it, and it's interesting, and it's important, but it's more of the same what we're talking about. He's struggling with these issues and with how you define them according to the various shitot, and we haven't gotten to, and I only have a minute left, and I don't really want to go that far over today, even though I always do. Nobody's ever complained. Might be because nobody's listening, I don't know. So if you're listening and you wanted to let me know you're listening, that wouldn't be bad. GROTHST@gmail.com. You know, as I sit here lonely, sending my words out into the ether, as it were, knowing that somebody's listening. I know a few people are listening because one or two people do, in fact, regularly email me, and I appreciate it enormously. So let's just get to, let's say we determine that walking is, in fact, better, because walking is going to violate only the Rabbanan of carrying, and there are complications in what horseback riding violates. But let's suppose that even once there's no biblical public space, it's still a violation of more things when you ride than when you walk. That would mean in terms of a single individual. But what about you're going to have many, many people, or more people, let's say there's going to be 5 horseback riders, but 20 walkers. So that, he says, is Gemara Menachot on Sama Gimel, talking about the cutting of the Omer. So Kanin Itzkana Konim says that when the day after Pesach was on a weekday, so then you'd have 3 people would cut the barley for the Omer sacrifice. But when it was on a Shabbos, so you still did it because the Omer is Dochesh Shabbat in that way, you still did it, but you'd only have 1 person cut it. So therefore, if Herzog says, it shows you that one person who's going to do all the same thing, because you have to cut it in the same way. So whatever the prohibitions are, you're going to end up doing those prohibitions. So that one person is going to end up doing more prohibitions than the 3 would have done each personally. Right? Each of those 3 people would have done fewer prohibitions. So in total, they would have done the same number, which Herzog doesn't point out. Right? It could be that the calculus would be, well, if the total number is going to be the same, that's where the Gemara prefers one person doing it, having fewer people, because the total number of prohibitions is all the same. But maybe theoretically, in Tirat Zvi's case, the 5 horseback riders will sum total end up doing more prohibitions than the 20 people on foot. So that he doesn't get into. But he says, you see that it's better if you're going to have people do stuff, going to have to do stuff, it seems to be better to have one person do more things rather than more people do fewer things. So he goes on to another issue. There's a brief discussion of Brit Milah, circumcision, whether you have more people doing it or not. And therefore, he seems to fundamentally come down on the side of horseback riding, but he's not clear about it for all the reasons that we said. So that's, as I said at the outset, it's a complicated question, and complicated because it's an important halacha, and I personally think the conclusion is it's not clear which way, and therefore, since it's necessary to do either way, has its pluses and minuses, and you pick your poison, and you take your shot at it. But fundamentally, Herzog has taught us for the second day of Iyar, Herzog has taught us the importance of how to think about halachic questions. In his case, the question of making sure the Tirat Tzvi, which is still around today, so it apparently worked, making sure the Tirat Tzvi is safe over the course of Shabbat, whether by horseback ridden guards or by guards on foot. My name is Gideon Rusty, and this has been a responsibility for the second of Iyar. Thank you to Rabbi David Hacha, to Rabbi Jack Abramowitz, to David Hachhauser, and to the OU. Have a great day.